Here we are. This is Real World Radio on air.
An attempt to retrace the intricate path of the architecture of impunity, how the international legal framework protects profit at the expense of peoples. What we see at the international level and often at the national level is an imbalance between the rights of peoples and the rights of corporations, warned environmental activist Sam Cossar-Gilbert, speaking about the investor-state dispute settlement mechanism in a recent webinar. The ISDS is a biased justice system organized by private lawyers, not by judges, and it's a tool for corporate impunity, explained the co-coordinator of the Economic Justice and Resistant Neoliberalism Program at Friends of the Earth International. On September the 6th, Cossar-Gilbert participated in the webinar Rights Only for Corporations, Obligations Only for States, How the International Legal Framework Protects Profit. This was the first in a series of webinars on corporate impunity and human rights organized by Justicia Ambiental, Friends of the Earth Mozambique. In this first webinar, Cossar-Gilbert, Australian, shared the floor with three other panelists: Ugandan activist Susan Nakagwa from GRAIN, Ecuadorian Adoración Guamá, professor of law at the University of Valencia in Spain, and Mozambican activist Erika Mendez from Justicia Ambiental. Aspects of the Architecture of Impunity 1, the ISDS. At Friends of the Earth, we say what we need is rights for peoples and rules for corporations, stated Cossar-Gilbert.
What we see often at the international level is that big multinational companies have very strong rights and privileges that are legally binding and sometimes cost government many millions and billions of dollars. Yet at the international level, often human rights are soft law, not enforceable and difficult to obtain. So what we see at the international level and often at the national level is an imbalance between the rights of people and the rights of corporations. And at Friends of the Earth, we say what we need is rights for people and rules for corporations.
A key tool to defend the rights of transnational corporations is the ISDS, a mechanism included in many trade and investment agreements to solve disputes between investors and states.
It is a mechanism involved in many hundreds of trade deals written into the trade deals. And what it is it's a secret trade court for companies. It's a form of private justice whereby foreign investors can sue governments and states for almost any policy that impacts their profits. There are some 1,000 cases brought around the world. And what we see with this system is it's one-sided. So it's only corporations that can sue governments. Governments or people can't sue corporations. It's binding. Some of the cases have been up to $5 billion. Recently, Pakistan faced a $5 billion case for stopping a mine. It's a biased justice system, so it's organized by private lawyers, not by judges or something like that. And it's a tool in the corporate impunity. So what it's used by companies, and I'll show you in some case studies, to threaten governments when they want to do the right thing. And it's used as a chilling tool to stop regulation.
Many organizations and social movements around the world are resisting and denouncing ISDS while demanding their states not to sign trade and investment agreements that include this mechanism. Aspects of the Architecture of Impunity 2, free trade. Susan Nakagwa made particular reference to free trade agreements and the threat they pose to family farmers. The activist spoke passionately about the importance of family farming.
Within GRAIN, we are very interested with the plight of smallholder farmers, and especially on the African continent, because we cannot deny that smallholder farmers do feed the world, and they are the majority on this continent. The African continent is home to about 33 million smallholder farmers, and the numbers are not really precise, but it could even go higher than that. One thing we have to put out there is that most of these smallholder farmers are women. It's a very huge and diverse continent, but for women in particular, the continent, women contribute about 60% of the labor force in agriculture, and they contribute up to 80% of total food production. Women are the custodians of seed. Women are the ones who save seed, and they grow that, they keep it, they feed their families, they make nutrition decisions, and they basically work within at least the middle part of the agricultural, for lack of a better word, value chain. And therefore, if they work, they don't work in money. And that means the buying of seed and the selling of the product that comes out of agriculture is normally done by men. So all of the work in between there, the harvesting of all of the weeding, the seed saving, the seed selection, the seed keeping, ensuring that the sector is diverse, all of that normally falls on the backs of women.
She then explained FTA negotiation processes.
The negotiation processes of all free trade agreements are never fair. They're never balanced. They're never transparent. And allow me give you an example. One African minister, I will not say the country, traveled one time to go and negotiate an agreement at the WTO. He was given instructions from home that he should go to the WTO, walk into the room, not ask any questions, but sign the document, take pictures, and leave. And one of the African negotiators asked him, "Mr. Minister, do you know what you just signed?" And he said, "I was told to come, sign, take pictures, ensure that they see me in the media, and I go home." So sometimes these are the kind of the negotiators that we have. But we also have to understand that the free trade agreements are not something that happened yesterday. It is a continuation of colonialism, imperialism, exploitation that we have been talking about for a very long time.
Aspects of the architecture of Impunity 3, value chains, and the corporate veil. According to lawyer Adoracion Guaman, we can see just how serious the levels of human rights abuses by transnational corporations are in the data from the United Nations Human Rights Council itself. Ever since the guideline principles on corporations and human rights were approved, which clearly have not changed this tragic reality, there have been 660 claims towards corporations and states related to human rights violations perpetrated by companies, said the specialist. Moreover, the growth is exponential. Of that total, 448 were perpetrated between 2019 and today, she stated. Woman referred to abuses committed by Chevron in the Ecuadorian Amazon and argued that this case exposes how the Lex Mercatoria, a bilateral investment treaty signed between Ecuador and the US, home country of Chevron, breaks the rule of law. This doesn't only allow transnational corporations to protect their rights as investments, but it allows them to violate human rights, she denounced. The expert explained the concept of value chains, saying it is fundamental to pay attention to the entire chain of operation of transnational corporations when addressing human rights violations perpetrated by those companies so that they cannot evade their responsibilities. Guaman believes that the only real and possible solution to face the architecture of impunity that violates human rights and nature every day is a binding treaty that is currently under negotiation at the UN Human Rights Council. This is where Erika Mendez from Justicia Ambiental focused her presentation during the webinar. She highlighted, first of all, that human rights abuses perpetrated by transnational companies are widespread at global level. Mendez also referenced the huge imbalance between the defense of human rights and the defense of corporate rights. This socioeconomic model grants many rights and privileges to big corporations, with thousands of free trade agreements and investment treaties ensuring the protection of investors' interests, she said. And on the other hand, there is not even one international binding instrument that holds corporations accountable and regulates them when they violate human rights or damage the environment, she added. The Justicia Ambiental activist spoke of the importance of the African group, which represents 54 countries in the continent which have been defending the binding treaty since negotiations at the UN began in 2015. She also reminded us that there are hundreds of social movements and organizations from five continents that are lobbying in favor of the treaty. Along these lines, Mendez mentioned the demands of civil society in relation to the treaty, since there are concerns over how the negotiation process is moving forward. The activists highlighted the need to focus on transnational corporations, the joint responsibility of corporations' headquarters in the entire value chain, the primacy of human rights over trade and investment agreements, the need for direct obligations for corporations, the need to put the rights and demands of affected people at the center of every negotiation process, and the need to protect these UN negotiations from the influence of the corporations themselves or corporate capture. Mendez believes we must demand our governments to actively participate in the UN treaty negotiations. We can't afford to end this process with an empty treaty. We need to conclude this with an effective international mechanism, she stressed.
Here we are. This is Real World Radio, on air.